when the sea comes back. But if there's no way you're moving back, well, when your face falls apart, have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that brings you insight into the paranormal and downright weird. It's Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock. Rightfully, it's Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange, but that guy, he's living it up in the tropics while we're up here in the mountains. A crazy weather week. Bam, bam, from late 30s last weekend up into the 80s this week. Yeah. I think there's some strange weather patterns going on in the world. Maybe some of these scientists doing some research on the aliens could tell us a little bit about that. Shelley, you didn't see this Vice article that came out this week, did you? It's fascinating. We are on the verge of discovering aliens, according to these scientists. Investigator Shelley Wright here to my left, and Sam the Animal Steel producing across the table to my right here. Envision this. They used to have a webcam during the show, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think Joshua did naughty things and we turned it off.
Oh, okay.
I used to always just hang like a t-shirt over it. I didn't like the man watching what I'm doing.
A fascinating new book seriously tackles the question of extraterrestrial life from the perspective of leading astronomers, astrophysicists, geneticists, and neuroscientists. Perfectly sane and intelligent people. Theoretical physics may be difficult and complicated, but it does have sex appeal. So says quantum physicist Jim Al-Khalil. It's easy to find an audience for popular science or for a TV documentary about the Big Bang or about black holes, he recently told me. Al-Khalil's work in the field has led to the fascinating new book, Aliens, The World's Leading Scientists on the Search for Extraterrestrial Life, which explores what he believes is the likely possibility of alien life. Maybe that's a guy we need to think about getting on for a future interview.
You know who else I would love to have on for a future interview? My favorite theoretical physicist, Michio Kaku.
Michio Kaku. I wouldn't even know how to talk to Michio Kaku. But
I agree.
Just normal. And he would relate it back to
Michio Kaku or Neil deGrasse Tyson. Which one?
Neil deGrasse Tyson would be interesting.
He's great. I was just watching a YouTube thing with Stephen Colbert interviewing him a couple years ago at some benefit thing, and they were just on this rinky-dink little school stage. It was amazing.
Wow.
Like, those two minds.
Yeah, I think the real genius is when you can relate it back to not even average, above average, but to a sort of layman audience.
That's what makes Tyson so great, is that not only his enthusiasm and joy of the subject of space, astronomy, you know, anything that goes along with that, but his joy in sharing it with people and not minding dumbing it down to our level. I mean, the guy's got a, you know, extraordinary brain that most of us can't understand the concepts of which he would be speaking to a colleague or something like that, but he can make it very relatable, and you're like, wow, that's interesting. You know, he makes you want to listen to it, you know, without going over your head and making you feel like a dummy.
Al-Khalil, the author of this book, Aliens, the World's Leading Scientists on the Search for Extraterrestrial Life. I'm just skimming this article on Vice. Listeners should probably go and check it out. The title again, We Are on the Verge of Discovering Aliens. I'll post the link up or get the link into the Speaking of Strange Facebook feed, so you can either go to the group page there, or watch for it in your news feed. If you're following Speaking of Strange on Facebook, which you should, Al-Khalil says, let's see, where was that? The real point.
He said, what I'm looking at is, astronomy has been advancing so quickly that what was unthinkable a decade ago is now reality. It's got to the point now where I'm quite optimistic that in my lifetime it's likely that we will discover life elsewhere. He goes on to say, you know, like that life might not be little green men in, you know, saucers. It might be microbial, tiny, you know, not even see, but that's life nonetheless.
Space right. Stuff.
That, which would be a big deal.
He poses the question, where is everybody? And his point is that the universe is so massive and contains so many planets that it makes little sense for Earth to be the only place where life blossomed unless our planet is, quote unquote, astonishingly and unjustifiably special. I think a lot of people who are non-believers or won't even open their minds to the possibility of life elsewhere in the universe are very Earth-centered, egocentric type. I don't think there's any excuse for us to assume that we're the only life out there. It's okay to feel special about the planet Earth.
I can't think of it off the top of my head, but like, what was like the first record played in space? Like, science, you know, for almost 100 years now, since the advent of radio, we've been broadcasting, or since we've been able to have the technology, we've been broadcasting radio waves in different messages constantly out into the ether.
Right.
Hoping that somebody somewhere out there would pick up on these. And it goes on to say, it's like, he says that we're starting with the assumption, with the idea that the laws of physics and the forces of nature are the same throughout the universe. There are four forces. Two of them are active inside atoms, the nuclear forces, and the only other two are gravity and electromagnetic force. And he's like, what makes us think necessarily that if we broadcast a radio wave or some sort of sound that, like, they're going to pick up on that necessarily, or what they might be sending out in to us that we would be picking up necessarily. And that, he goes on to talk about the SETI program, about listening out into the universe to hear some electromagnetic signal that we don't think could have happened naturally.
Right. There are reports of all sorts of intelligent patterns, signals from space. And I've got a friend who, we could have him on the show sometime. Jim Hale, he's a amateur radio astronomer, and he monitors a lot of the signals from space. And he says sometimes there are anomalies that seem so much like an intelligent pattern that it would make you question whether this is naturally occurring.
It's not like it would be like, hey, guess what?
hey, dudes.
I mean, it might just be, you know, like I'm sure you've heard some of that stuff. We've played some of that audio in the past on the show, and it's something like this, like, that's it, you know? And they're like, oh, did you hear it?
The pitch
like, changes. What? That was it? It was like Howie's Comet, you know? We're about the same age, and you lived down in Florida at the time. Did you go see Howie's Comet?
I remember
was that, 86?
I remember the talk about Halley's Comet, and I did not.
I went down
to
Clearwater Beach and got to stand behind a really big telescope. And I was a little kid, and I was, like, so excited because it was late at night, you know. And I was, you know, the big hype about Halley's Comet, just, you know, forever leading up to it.
Right.
Once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Looked at this huge telescope, and it was, like, this tiny little grain of sand. I was like, that's it? That's it?
Like,
that's why I stayed up all night. You know, it was like midnight, but for a younger kid, I was like, it's midnight. It's crazy. I'm on the beach.
Right. Well, just the excitement of,
when you're talking space stuff, it's, the scope, like you said, it's mammoth. We can't wrap our heads around the size of space when they're talking about, you know, these radio waves. He's like, we're only, our electromagnetic signals have only extended out to a radius of 100 light years, which is nothing. Like, nothing would be within 100 light years of us. Like, that's just preposterous.
Right. No signal from Earth could have reached further than 100 light years.
And then they're saying that that's, in space terms, like next door. It's like, go 100 light years to get a cup of sugar. And it makes you start thinking, like, man, the human brain cannot comprehend fully the idea of space.
Jim Al-Khalili, I think I'm pronouncing that pretty close to correct. But anyway, jot down the title of that book, Aliens, the World's Leading Scientists.
Looks pretty interesting.
On the Search for Extraterrestrial Life. Yeah, I'll see if I can get a review copy of that one. Speaking of books, either of you care to venture a guess what the most stolen book in the Buncombe County Library System is?
Can you give a hint?
We know the author.
Haunted Asheville?
Yes.
You're kidding, really?
Haunted Asheville is the most stolen book in the Buncombe County Library System.
I've got a first.
Every library,
I got a first edition signed copy.
Every
that.
Library has had to replace it several times, and I told one of the librarians, I said, maybe Josh is just sending his minions out into the library.
Except I don't think that he even, when I told him I had like a first edition copy, I don't even think he has a first edition copy.
No, there have been at least three or four different covers. And I think Josh finally sold the rights outright to it. He held on to it for the first couple editions, and then eventually just sold it outright because he was done with it. Of course, he adapted most of the stories in Haunted Asheville into tour material, and there is a great amount of newer material that he said he would not be publishing Haunted Asheville Volume 2 because proprietary material is harder to it's kind of hard to defend once it's out there in published form because people will just take their script for it. There are
that was written
haunted.
Well,
there are
before
other...
the internet, and I remember he came into our creative writing class when I was in college at AB Tech, and so we're the same age, and I think I was like 17, 18 or something. I was like, he's so cool. But then I got to know him. Just kidding.
The most stolen book in Buncombe County. That's where Asheville, North Carolina lies for all you people out there in the world. The most stolen book in Buncombe County library system is Joshua P. Warren's Haunted Asheville that he wrote when he was just a lad.
A wee lad.
We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to Joshua P. Warren. Speaking of strange, here's interesting news, Shelley and Sam. This report seems a little bit, I don't know, you tell me what you make of it. Seems a little bit over the top. Russian scientists produce a technology that can transform any element into another. Even though it sounds like science fiction, it's not. A couple of days ago, Russian scientists successfully created a technology that can alter the protons of an atom and change the atom itself, making one element from another with the addition of a biochemical process. This possibly historical discovery was made public after a couple of successful tests in which chemical elements were transmuted to become other elements. This concludes a dynasty of researchers trying to turn lead into gold for thousands of years. Now alchemy is a real science. This is possibly one of the most powerful discoveries of science in the history of mankind. Scientists are focused not on turning lead into gold, but creating a certain element which can only be superficially created for the purpose of fueling spacecraft. However, this can be a revolution in almost every industry, considering this technology can be tweaked to turn any element into another. However, we'll see what politics will make of this. That's from www.anonnews.co.
I like how you put the www. Yeah. http://.
Right. HTTP. High Text Transfer Protocol. Okay, yeah. And there's a 1.5-hour press conference about it on YouTube.
You look like you're about to throw down the hooey card.
I call bull on that. I think it's just I think it's coming from a source that's a little bit generic, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Fake news.
Fake news.
What do you think, though, about manipulating elements, transmuting elements one to the other? I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility, but I don't know about the Ruskies having a news conference about it the other day.
No, and I think that if you try to do any Star Trek kind of jibber-jabber, you know, I think it could be something that's feasible, but with ramifications. You might change, I'm trying to think of something like A into B, but you'd get B hybrid. You know what I'm saying?
Right. From what little chemistry I didn't sleep through in high school.
I was not good at the chemistry.
No. Here's one that it's disturbing. I could save it for the Dark 30 just because it's disturbing. I saw the video, and it's just one of those things. You ever on social media or whatever, and people post in a video, and you're like, why would I even want to watch that? Yeah. That's not going to make me feel good.
No.
A teen busted for throwing a woman in a swimming pool. The victim, 68 years old, complained about a noisy party at a Florida complex. We didn't have the bell. There we go. A Florida teenager is facing a battery charge after he threw a 68-year-old woman into a swimming pool after she complained about the noise level at a raucous party at a North Lauderdale housing complex. As detailed in a Broward County Sheriff's Office report, the victim, who was a board member of the Players Place Homeowners Association, sought to stop an unauthorized pool party. A video seen all over the internet after the board enforcement officer for the gated community arrived poolside and ordered the party to stop. She told the teens they had no permit, and it was past 9 p.m., and the pool was closed, and everyone needed to leave. She was then grabbed from behind by a 16-year-old male who lifted her up in the air before tumbling to the concrete pool deck. He's heard yelling, "Death to the party pooper," and "Suplex," and then struts around her like a wrestler would. Then the 16-year-old yelled, "Finishing move," and he dragged the elderly victim several feet, picked her up over his head, and threw her into the pool. He then yelled at the person filming, "Flawless victory." The victim was frightened and upset and sustained injuries to her leg and shoulder as a result of the incident. The woman suffered large bruises on her shoulder and leg. She was treated at a local hospital. Investigators quickly identified the male seen in the video that was posted to Facebook as a culprit, and he reportedly confessed to the crime in the presence of his mother and his lawyer. "I messed up bad, and I have to own up to it It's not clear if drugs or alcohol were involved in the incident.
I would assume.
You would hope, even. Police are not sure what crime the boy will be charged with based on the statements made in the video. One could believe he was intending to have killed the woman, and she is lucky to be alive after the trauma she suffered. Yeah, it was a shocking video.
I did not watch the video.
Body slamming
an old
woman on the concrete.
Did I ever tell you about the old lady and me at the pool? This is a good one. I got a story.
Okay.
It was like a couple years ago. I was living in a different apartment complex, and at the time, we had a pretty decent pool crew. A lot of people who did not work. A lot of people who were hardcore drinkers in the daytime, and you became friends with them. You're like, "Hey, red shorts guy. Hey, frosted tips guy."
Right.
And everybody was just wasted, except for me. And so I had a lady friend with me, and there was this older lady there, and, I mean, she was drunker than Cooter Brown, right? I mean, she was drinking, like, big solo cups full of wine, just full of wine, chugging them, another one. So I'm sitting with my friends. They're over at a table. Everybody's having a good time. I've never met the lady. She looks at me, points right at me, and she goes, "You're the devil." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And she wouldn't let, she just kept, "You're the devil. You're the devil." And she's losing it. I'm like, "Look, lady, I don't know who you are." And they're like, "Okay, you know, that's Sam. He's cool. He's not the devil as far as we know." She would not drop it. And she comes over. The girl I'm with, she was a feisty little bugger. And she gets up in this lady's face. She's like, "I'm going to kick your butt." I'm like, "Do not kick the old lady's butt. This is not good." And so I'm holding her back. Things are escalating. The lady's now screaming at me, "You're Satan. You're the devil." And in the pool was a judge, Doug the judge, and he was a cool guy. So I got my hands out because I'm like, "Look, I am not touching this lady." And she comes, runs up, and shoves me full on. So I got my hands out. I'm like, "Look, I'm not touching this lady. You can all see." And she's like, "You're the devil." Shoves me again. I do not move. Physics work against her. She bounces off me, fully clothed, starts tumbling, and everything stopped. You could hear like the fluttering of a bumblebee's wings. And you see in slow motion what's about to happen, that her head is going to hit the corner of the concrete of the pool and splatter open. And you're like, "No." And like everything is in slow motion. She missed the corner of the pool by like an eighth of an inch, but there's a concrete seat on that side, and her head went down, bam, and she's floating, fully clothed, face down, dead man float. Doug the judge is going over there. He's like, it was insane. It was craziness, man. And I'm like, "I didn't touch her. Did not shove the old lady in the pool." And it escalated out of there. And they were like, "It's okay. Get out of the pool. Here, have a drink." I'm like, "She does not need another drink. Give her some water." Gracious. Then I found out later she had had a history of problems like that at the complex, where she would fall downstairs. They would find her in the woods. She had a drinking problem.
Okay.
But we ended up talking, and for a while anyway, I got her off the bottle.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yay.
But I don't think that lasted. She's probably shoving other Satans into the pool.
Did you convince her that you weren't the devil for
no,
a while?
No, but I mean, it kind of worried me. I was like, "What if I am? What if I am the devil?"
Oh, my goodness. Doug the judge.
I like that. If he's
listening,
he was an avid radio listener because he worked in this courtroom at the DMV. Didn't know they had a court. They do.
DMV court.
And it was very thick walls in there. He's the only station he could pick up was my classic rock station down the hall. So he knew who I was. He was like, "Man, I love you." So like, he was cool. So Doug the judge, radio fan, if you're listening, miss you, buddy. Good dude.
We are broadcasting from the News Radio 570 studios, WWNC. I love that story. I think that's a good one. It wasn't necessarily a pizza parallel. I've decided that when we do our pizza parallels, we need to use the Sammy. You mentioned Sammy Davis Jr. Let's use the Candyman can. Pizza parallels.
We'll make the song one of these nights.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
You're listening to Speaking of Strange, and we're just having a good old time. Hope you are too. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange from the 570 WWNC studios. Shelley Wright's over here looking through the Dark 30 material. Is it going to be a pretty good Dark 30, Shelley? Yeah. Well, you're going to want to stick around for that. In any case, if you like the Dark 30 material, if you're offended, then that third hour of Speaking of Strange, notorious for upsetting people, hurting feelings.
Aw, why did they listen?
I don't know. No, I think those who tune in pretty well know what's going on by now. During the break, Shelley mentioned, you know, we talk about, there's paranormal shows, and we talk about the world of the paranormal, but we don't really talk about what scares us. I mentioned the other week that when I was up at Buck Springs, the boys went in the spring house and looked up in the it's got the old wooden shingles, and they looked up in the rafters, and there was a mouse running through there.
Yeah.
And they said, and Sylvan, my oldest, said, "Dad, you've got to go in there. There's a mouse." And I had to do that for my boy because Dad can't wimp out.
You can't
let your 12-year-old son see you being afraid of a mouse.
You didn't kill the mouse, did
you? No, I didn't kill the mouse. I just went in there, and I was a little bit concerned about it. But that's when that orb photo, the very curious orb photo, it was an orb that looked kind of like a Venn diagram. It was like a double orb with a third orb in the middle. I don't even know how that worked. I'll have to
It's like three out of four
picture.
Dentists.
are afraid of mice and have ghostly phenomena following them and have stolen badges from piles of human remains. All those things.
Back to the human remains.
Yeah, that was the same place, Sam. Same place. This is our running narrative. We haven't got up there to settle with those spirits yet. So I got some bad juju until I get back up there and settle with those spirits.
You know what's weird is you're talking about mice, and I was thinking in my head, like, well, at least it's not a rat or a possum. Look to your left under the TV, and as I'm thinking, at least it's not a possum, look at what's under the TV.
Ah! Oh, my God!
It's a possum!
There's a stuffed possum.
Wearing a tiara.
Wearing a tiara under the TV that I've never seen before.
I'm not as scared of possums as I am rats, man.
Oh, well, possums are, I mean,
they're nasty.
They're nasty
creatures.
But they're sweet and they're dumb and they're blind.
They have cute little toes. Have you ever looked at their feet? I decided one time they were just so ugly. I thought, well, there's got to be some redeeming feature.
It's the tail. It's the tail is what gets it.
Yeah. But the cute little feet. Toes.
The only North American marsupial.
Hey.
Well, yeah.
Do they have a pouch?
Pouch babies, yes.
They have a pouch.
Possums have pouches.
Huh.
They do. They give live birth, and then the little possum babies, stay warm in the pouch for a while. When they're first born, they're just like these little hairless critters. Yeah, possums.
And they have very poor eyesight.
Very poor.
That's why they're always in the middle of the road.
Yeah. Why did the chicken cross the road? To show the possum it could be done.
Ooh.
Why did the horse cross the road? Someone yelled, hey.
You'll be here all night.
Ba-dum-dum. Yeah.
I'll be here next Thursday as well.
Right? Oh, my goodness. Sam, you were ready to talk a little bit about things that scared you. I'll go ahead and I guess we should let you throw it out there. I have an answer to your story that we didn't mention off list though.
Okay. Well, when I was a child, a youngin, I must have been 3-4 years old, something like that. Maybe 5, probably 3-4, somewhere in that. I have to ask mom. But it was like I had this reoccurring nightmare. Not like once or twice. I mean, this went on for a period of years. And my dad had made me this wardrobe that had, like, bookshelves on both sides and, like, a wardrobe in the middle, like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and toy chests on each side. He built it on a wall of the room. And I had bunk beds or whatever, so I'd sleep on the top bunk by myself. And at night, as soon as I would go to sleep, the doors of this, in my brain, I guess, in my dream state, the doors of this wardrobe would open. And this mannequin would float out over the top bunk, and she was wearing roller skates, which doesn't make any sense if you're floating. And she had no face, not just like the mannequin, no face. It was like a melt, just blank, smooth plastic face. And her name was Miriam, which is very specific. And she would float, hover over me, and then just start tickling me. And I would wake up just screaming bloody murder and just screaming, stop, Miriam, no, stop. And this went on for like a long time, like over a year, And to this day, I got to tell girls and stuff, be like, seriously, do not tickle me. Like, you might think it's funny. I have no control over what's going to happen if you tickle me. Like, I'm going to start throwing elbows. Like, I do not like to be tickled. And it all goes back to this. And we were saying off the air, I was like, dang, now that I think about it, that's kind of messed up. Because my family knew nobody named Miriam. I saw it was not sucking up media at the time. So it's not like I had some movie in my head. Still never seen a movie involving a floating mannequin with roller skates. And I was petrified to go into the dang Sears or the Montgomery Wards for years after that because of the mannequins in there. But now, to confront my fear, in my home, I have a mannequin head, a black glass mannequin head from the 50s, and her name is Sheila, and she sits up on top of a shelf, and she's got a blank mannequin face. I face my fears daily with Sheila in the house.
Wow, it's kind of like shades of Xanadu meets Salem's Lot, is what I think. Because if you took the roller skating girls from Xanadu and mixed them with that floating spirit floating over the bed from Salem's Lot.
I'll have to watch that scene.
It's kind of what you described there. Miriam, but you were not exposed to that sort of stuff.
No, I mean, A, I was young. B, I was raised in a very conservative home. Like, no rock music, no...
But you knew who Dr. Paul Bearer was.
Oh, that was cool. Like, my dad was really into monsters. Like, he's got a nice collection of famous monsters of Filmland magazines.
Right.
He loved monster movies and stuff. So Dr. Paul Bearer on WTOG 44 on Saturdays was That was totally cool.
Okay.
It was, you know, but no, we don't know anybody named Miriam, and it's never really been brought up in many, many years. I'm going to have to, like, do some more thinking about that, because now that I'm older, I'm like, that's...
And how old were you?
Like, three?
That is
four? And it's
scary.
Went on for a long time. Maybe we'll get mom. We'll, like, call my mom.
Interview your mom about Miriam.
It goes probably way, way deeper than I can remember, but now looking at it, I'm like, what if that was, like, some sort of spirit in that house or, you know, in that area of Florida?
Hmm. I had a recurring Sasquatch dream as a kid because I grew up in an orange grove, and I would walk maybe a quarter of a mile through the orange grove behind my uncle's house down to my friend Joe's house. I mean, so I roamed around in this orange grove from the time I could walk. But I remember very early on that I would have this dream that there was a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch, you know, a big hairy ape man.
Not a Yeti.
In the orange grove, and he would chase me back to my house, and no matter where I went, this was what was so frightening.
This is a dream?
This was what was so frightening in the dream was that I would get inside the house and lock myself in, and the Sasquatch could not get at me inside the house. But no matter where I hid inside the house, the Sasquatch had found a window and was staring in at me.
That's some Twilight Zone stuff
right
there.
I would, like, get inside the front room under the couch and look out, and there's Sasquatch looking in that window.
Now, obviously, this is all pre-internet and whatnot.
Oh, sure.
Now, these days, like, I rarely dream. I remember Josh would always say that he was a lucid dreamer and he could, like, insert himself into wherever he wanted to be. I don't think I rarely these days dream at all. And but on the rare occasion I do, if it's something, like, very intense, I'll wake up and I'll Google it, like, immediately. Like, what does this mean in a dream? And I wonder what it would say if we looked up, like, a Sasquatch is watching me. It's got to have deep,
right?
It's got to have overtones of, like, it's got to mean something.
Some Carl Jung psychological implications.
Well, everything means something.
Right. There was no place to hide. There was no place to hide from the eyes of the Sasquatch.
I'll get on that.
Shelly, did you have any childhood dreams? We're rolling up on a break.
We're going to find out after the break what scared Shelly Wright as a youngster or as an adult.
Right. Facing our fears.
Counterfeit coins.
Foil-wrapped
chocolate coins.
Right. Yep. The Hanukkah geld. Terrified her. We'll find out when we come back. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. final minutes of the first hour of Speaking of Strange on your Saturday night. Thanks for joining us. Shelley Wright was about to get put on the spot before the last break. You must remember some childhood dreams, recurring dreams. Every child had them.
You know, I always had a lot of dreams. I mean, I always remembered them, and I was trying to think, well, what scared me? What did I dream of? But the thing is, you know, when I was little, I mean, starting when I was 4, I had all of this ghost stuff happening. So the scary stuff wasn't in my dreams. It was in real life while I was awake. So, you know, the whole dream thing is sort of that was actually a good time. I could tell you about things that scare me now. I hate mirrors. I mean, I really hate mirrors. I'll know what it is. I don't remember ever seeing anything in a mirror that scared me, but they creep me out. I've got mirrors in my house, but I don't. But the bigger mirrors I put in a room that I don't go in very often. And I've got places on walls where it's begging for a mirror. And I think that. And then I think, no, I don't like mirrors. I'm not putting a mirror there.
Right. So just for utility purposes, you know, maybe in a compact or in the bathroom.
Yeah,
or,
you know, smooth the hair down. Right. You know, you're brushing your teeth.
But just mirrors in hallways, mirrors on display, mirrors
hate them
hanging around. Yeah,
yeah,
they're kind of peculiar.
Joshua goes and does this psychomantium thing, and then there's something else to be hating mirrors over.
I've got to find you that. I've got a PDF file. I made a PDF file of it. I found an old book from the 20s or 30s. It was like a spiritualist publication about conducting a mirror ritual. It was very similar to the psychomantium.
Bloody Mary.
One chapter of this book, Sam, refers to what can go wrong if you the mirror ritual with the candles, and if what can go wrong, and demons, it warns about demons coming through.
You know how I
like
feel
that.
About opening the dark door. We don't want to do that.
No. So
didn't you say you had a thing for my Miriam dream, my mannequin?
Well, my answer to that, I didn't have an answer for your dream, but my answer to your dream, my equivalent.
Oh, you're okay.
I was saying that my equivalent of the Miriam dream would have been the Sasquatch sees you dream.
It's called the Sasquatch
can see you dream. No matter where you are, Sasquatch can see you. I'm thinking about the
house
I grew up in.
That's a song waiting to be written.
Sasquatch will
no
see
matter
you now.
Where you are, Sasquatch can see you.
I like it. It's frightening to a kid because I would run through the scenario of hiding in every room, and there was always a window, and Sasquatch just.
Those
waiting outside, just
windows.
Looking. Yeah, the jealousy windows, exactly. He's peeking through the jealousy windows at you.
It just totally made me think of the man on the wing, or the creature on the wing episode of Twilight
Zone. Twilight Zone, yes!
Yeah.
William Shatner!
Yeah, I didn't see that until years later, but that is a similar thing. So Shelley does not like mirrors. Can you think of a particular incident that has been really disturbing for you?
No, I can't think of anything. There's got to be something.
Did you sit your face?
Did you do the psychomantium?
I did, but nothing happened. I mean, I heard some music, some old-timey music, but that was it. I didn't see anything.
So like an auditory hallucination, or you thought that you heard music that wasn't going on, huh? Yeah, that's it's kind of I
indigenous
compare
tribes think that, you know, cameras can steal your soul. Maybe you think a mirror, you're looking too deep into your soul.
Mm. Or that there will be something behind me that reaches for me and grabs me and chokes the life out of me. I don't know.
Hmm. Now, see, that sounds more like what's really scary. That's the root of your mirror scare, right?
Well, you know, the only I never had a problem with even now, I don't think about something reaching out and choking me. And I got choked in Romania. Remember, I was in that castle, Bran Castle. I got choked there by something.
Vlad.
Something invisible was choking Shelley. The psychomantium, for those who haven't been listening to Speaking of Strange for years, is kind of like a dark sensory deprivation room,
mm-hmm.
where you are seated against one wall with backlit with a candle or a very dim blue light bulb, and across from you on the opposite wall is a large mirror, and you just sit there in the dark and stare into the mirror until, well,
weird.
I had some strange hallucinations in the psychomantium. Maybe next hour we could delve into some of that stuff, because mm-hmm. it was very dark.
Vance's acid flashbacks on Speaking of Strange.
Hour two of your evening. We're just getting started.